Hello and welcome to this week's instalment of Nucleus Investment Insights. We have another special guest this week in Denise Braley, who is President of the Banking and Finance Consumers Support Association, or the BFCSA. The BFCSA investigates fraud involving lenders, spruikers, and financial planners worldwide. For the past two decades, Ms. Braley, the President, has been a tireless campaigner and championing of the cause of older and low-income people around the globe who have fallen victim to banking and finance scams. She has found that people of all ages have been targeted by bankers offering faulty lending products. The BFCSA warned that anyone who signed up for one of these financial products is in grave danger of losing their home. In today's interview, we discuss some of the finer details from the Royal Commission into the misconduct in banking, superannuation and financial services industry, with a special focus on some of the startling revelations that Denise has come across in her experience. We also finish on some of the top tips that she can provide to help new borrowers avoid similar experiences. After the interview, we'll then look at some of the wider investment implications that these themes can impact on how we invest money every day at Nucleus Wealth. I hope you enjoy.
So today on the podcast, we have the President of the Banking and Finance Consumers Support Association, Denise Braley. Welcome to Nucleus Investment Insights.
Yes, thank you very much, Tim.
So, look, I thought I might start by providing some background for our listeners about the work that the BFCSA does and why it's important to these.
Yes, well, it's the Banking and Finance Consumers Support Association. And we have a number of members at any one time, several hundred. They're in all states in Australia, but I mainly deal with mortgage fraud, people that have got problems with mortgages.
I wanted to see whether you've seen an increase in the number of people sort of coming forth with mortgage problems following the Royal Commission.
Well, it's been a steady flow for the last 20 years. But are there a few more? Yes, there are a few more because of the Royal Commission. But they may not know of me or my name. I don't advertise. We just run this BFCSA, which is the Banking and Finance Consumers Support Association. It's an incorporated, like a little club, if you like, but it has members all over Australia in each state and also New Zealand. And I've also had inquiries from Ireland and Canada and UK and America. Yeah. Mortgage fraud is a big problem.
And are you seeing, what's come from the Royal Commission, I guess, are you seeing any fundamental changes that you think will come out of the recommendations, or does it seem a little bit that everyone's on their best behaviour for a few years, but then if the regulator goes back to doing what they were doing before, that we'll just be sort of back in the same position in sort of 5 years' time?
Well, the problem here is that the Hayne Royal Commission has done very little for this issue at all. It didn't call me in to be a witness on the stand because the terms of reference were devised by Kenneth Hayne and also Kenneth Henry in November 2017. And those terms of reference that they cobbled together were only a weak Royal Commission of below community standards. Well, that's not to look at any criminal activity at all. And what's more, they only spent 10 days looking into mortgage fraud. The rest was to do with fees for no work done. And, the losses on fees for no work done are something like $9,000 loss over 10 years for those victims of that particular scandal or part of the scandal. But the mortgage fraud victims' losses are about $200,000 per person.
Wow, that's amazing.
And we spent all that money on a Royal Commission trying to look at the pimple on the rock instead of the rock.
You mentioned before, so you weren't called up on stand, but did you? So you put something forward to the guys at the Royal Commission?
Yes, I put a Royal Commission submission in, and I it's 14 pages, and I decided to not write it not like a normal report. I just spent 14 pages of dot point of what the absolute mechanics of the fraud were. I described it as being the black box. I described and gave evidence in those dot points of the activity within inside the bank of why the major banks were running a cartel.
Okay. And obviously there was a portion of, well, the blame was apportioned towards the end there. Quite surprisingly, it seemed to be pointed at the brokers and perhaps the regulators as opposed to the banks. Were you obviously surprised by that?
Well, I wasn't surprised because that's what ASIC's been busy doing against me for 20 years.
Right.
They were busy blaming the brokers. It's not the brokers. I keep telling, when people ring me up because they've got a problem, mum and dad are about to lose their home or whatever it is, I say, look, it's not the brokers at all. You're blaming the wrong people. That's what ASIC wants you to do, and the banks want you to do. The person to blame is the regulator for not doing a proper investigation and releasing the information they knew to be true of what the banks were doing that was against the law. And it's really the banks that were running the whole show. They were the manufacturers of the product. They were the controller of the systems. They were running the robotic approval system of which they controlled the algorithms, which I've got copies of. And I am disgusted by what's happened in terms of the banks themselves, of lying to the public. That's what's been happening.
So Denise, the main, like, we're looking at this from an investment perspective in terms of the there's obviously been a big scale back in a number of mortgages that are going out at the moment as banks have sort of stopped using the HEM measure. And sort of central to our sort of thesis is that that's not letting up anytime soon, and that banks are going to keep, you know, the credit that was previously available isn't available now, and so there's sort of issues for the Australian economy going forward. It sounds as if you think that there is still scope, even though they've scaled back the mortgage lending a lot, there is still scope for them to be doing lending, the fraudulent lending that they shouldn't be lending?
Well, they are definitely still selling the product. That's why they need the sellers to continue. First of all, they were oscillating. Do we let the brokers go? ASIC was suggesting, well, maybe the consumers can pay for the advice. Why would you pay for the advice when it is clear the sellers have only got 3 weeks' instructions on how to fill out 11-page form and hand it in on your behalf? They're not allowed to give financial advice.
Right.
So why would you pay for advice when the people you're asking to pay for the advice to get a loan, why not go straight in the front door of the bank, and why not the bank put a big white poster in the window saying, we do loans here, and you go in there and you get the loan cheaper anyway? Why would you not do that?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It would make the broker channel obsolete, and the banks know that. Mm. But they need the broker channel to go out and spruik people. People are thinking investors are running into these loans and wanting to buy property and are in a frenzy to buy property. That wasn't happening at all. The property bubble and the property market being pushed up were pushed up by the actual spruikers. And we thought that years ago, when I first started exposing the spruikers in 2001 onward, I thought they were the villains. And then I realized, I'm not trying to defend them now, but I'm saying that what they were doing is being funded by the banks for the creating wealth industry, which sprung up at the same time. So why did this creating wealth industry suddenly spring up with all these spruikers running creating wealth seminars? And I also found out from other informants the Spruker employees were from these big Spruker houses. They were actually given credit card details and lists of the people that had credit cards to invite them to the seminars.
Wow, that's incredible.
Now, how did that happen? Right? These are divine interventions, aren't they? And the next thing that happened is that the brokers were told, and I was front row as a VIP guest for one of the major banks, sitting there at their invitation in between the managing director and the second director, and I remember one of them leaning across saying, "You will behave, Denise, won't you?" And I said, "Yes, I will." And it was around about 2002 or 3, somewhere around there. And Peter Costello was the speaker. And he was explaining to the audience. The audience was 1,000 financial planners or brokers or whatever, sellers. I call them all sellers of product. And these sellers were being told, go out and find new markets. So, of course, the bank was going to teach them what market to go for, and it was ARIPs, asset-rich, income-poor. I leaned over to the person I was there as a guest and said, my God, they're going to go after the pensioners, and that's exactly what they did. Peter Costello gave an example of a lady in Chatswood that was elderly, was living in a 1960s home, and at that time, her home was just a very average 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom, and if you approach her, she's sitting on a $1 million block of land, and she has no debt, but she's on a pension, so she's low income, and that is the acronym ARIPs, asset rich, income poor. So they knew the people were poor in income, but the banks could develop a product by which it was very easy then to get them to believe that they should go and get themselves off the pension for the good of the nation and on to becoming retirees. And we will teach you and guide you, and we are working for the major banks. That's how it was sold. Still is.
So
if we're thinking it's not being sold right now, it certainly is. They haven't got anything else to sell. I've asked brokers. I get a lot of information from the brokers. They're telling me that 80% of the deals they sell are in interest only. 80% of their selling capacity is interest only. It's frightening.
And are there other areas of the market? So, you know, trying to watch the shadow banking sector is always tough, but are you seeing that there's the people who can't get lending from the major banks, where are they ending up now?
Well, it divides between whether someone is a real buyer or a fake buyer and borrower, right? If someone is a real buyer, they're a person with deposit, for example, that wants to go out and buy a first home or a second home, and will go into a bank and ask for a loan. Is that not correct?
Hmm.
But what I'm talking about was a mass industry called Creating Wealth that targeted people, mum and dad, that owned their own home and had no debt. And it was an equity release program to pull the equity out of their home so they could use it like a casino and throw it onto the property market for gambling purposes.
Right, yep.
And no idea what they were doing. Your parents could have done the same thing. You better all check your parents to see whether they've lost the house or not.
And do you think this is now pretty much finished, or you think it's still going on?
No, I think there's a dilemma now amongst the regulators. That's why the Royal Commission was put on. As soon as I wrote to Bill Shorten in 2016, within 10 days they were in touch with me saying, Denise, we're running. They put up the idea of a press conference, of the idea of a Royal Commission into the banks. And then Gail Kelly said later, oh, we've been working very, very hard since 2016. Well, bingo. That was exactly when all this blew up, that there was going to be a Royal Commission into the banks. It became a politically motivated tool.
Hmm.
It's all about politics, and I did political science as a degree, so I understand how it's supposed to work as against it doesn't. But the minute Bill Shorten came out with that, it's obvious that the Liberal Party decided in its wisdom that it would create its own Royal Commission, but water down in terms of reference that wouldn't find anything about what I'd been talking about for 20 years.
And Dinesh, do you think that obviously you're talking about in this case what, you know, it's tantamount to fraud. I think we can both agree on that, with this asset rich income poor targeting essentially.
Yes.
Have you got anything to add really on the use? And it did come up a little bit in the review on the household expenditure measure and the other various sort of measures that.
Yes. Now, I'm the one that raised this. I raised it through a person that I thought was going to take it through to the Parliament. They did, but they took it through another small party, and they didn't understand it and hadn't been briefed by me anyway, so it didn't go very far. But it did get a mention, and it was asking in the Estimates Committee hearing of the bank grilling, what they call now the bank grilling, the bankers to explain the HEM and the HPI, the use of the HPI. Now, what people don't understand is the HEM is a household expense measurement. It's been there for years, and it's not always regularly updated, as I understand it. So you could be looking at an HEM that was put together 10 years ago.
Mm.
The banks weren't supposed to be doing that. They were supposed to be asking the customer, like a prudent banker would do this under the code, ask the customer, can you afford this loan? Instead, they were getting sellers that didn't understand it either to teach them that, yes, you can afford it. That was the historical selling spiel that they were using. So the HEM, for example, ran alongside another one called the HPI. Now, what a lot of people don't know is when I was really coming out with this big time in 2011 and 12, they came up with this HEM, which is just slightly higher than the HPI. The HPI is the poverty index.
Right. Yep.
So I've often joked along that what the banks were using between 1998 and 2011 was the Henderson Poverty Index. So we seem to have forgotten that.
Right.
So
the
people didn't know that this was being used. It was put on their loan application form, and every loan application form has got in handwriting by the seller, whether it was a bank manager or a broker, the fraud was the same. Bank managers didn't know it was a fraud. The brokers didn't know it was a fraud. They were just told to write down HPI. So they were put down the HPI as the cost of living. That is what this is all about, the cost of living. So I used to joke that that meant that the banking contemplated if you got a 30-year loan that you cannot afford because you're on an old-age pension, but you're going to get a tenant in, but you've got no money to pay the shortfall, that we'll give you buffer monies, but we'll write it down on the form as being affordable because you can live on bread and water for the next 30 years.
Wow, yep.
Now, the HEM is only $2,000 above that figure, so it still wasn't adequate. What you need is the borrower, and I don't see this in the HEM report, what you need the recommendation to be is that the borrower writes his own expenses. Now, I've got cases where the people wrote their own expenses list. This is our expenses in our budget. We do our own budget. We're pretty meticulous. We're 60 years old. We've been doing this for years, or 70. And they give that to the seller. The seller puts it in with the bundle, and the bank destroys it.
Wow.
And on the tracker is the main document that the broker doesn't see, the borrower doesn't see. And on the tracker, it shows where the actual cost of living then is put in as a fanciful figure, because the ideal about what I'm saying right now is to actually fudge the cost of living downward to represent, in other words, underestimate the cost of living,
mm.
and at the same time exaggerate the income. That's what they were doing on every single approval.
Well,
still are. It doesn't work if they don't do that. Then it all goes into the computer and it's robo-approved.
Mm.
Now, what I found out from the algorithms is that algorithms is, of course, the questions that you're asking, the computer is asking, does this match Y and does that match this bit? And then it comes out with an answer and it comes out with a predetermined answer. So the tracker is a detail of the customer file in about 12 pages, but the people never see those pages. And the original loan application forms are 12 pages, but the customer only ever sees 3 pages for 3 signatures. He doesn't see the other pages at all. So they didn't know there was any fraud at all.
And so, Denise, on that note, obviously, judging from your sample size, you see the problem ones, because people obviously come and seek out your services and support because, something's gone wrong, or clearly has. Would you be comfortable in saying, is there sort of a prevalent institution that you see more often across your desk, or is there sort of, or conversely, is there an absence of perhaps a particular institution that that you don't see a lot of, or is this more of a systematic thing that you just see regularly? It could be one of the big four.
Yeah, this is a systematic fraud controlled by the major banks in Australia. There are at least 8 lenders involved now. There were 16 lenders involved. That's narrowed down mainly to the big four. They've got round about 90% of that market now. So this is all controlled and was from day one by the major banks. It was never developed by the minor lenders at all.
Right. And so would you say, and I guess this is, we probably should have kicked off with this because I can already hear some angry emails and phone calls coming from the broking community who may listen to this, but do you find, and I guess having been in the industry for so much time and been on the receiving end of these sort of complaints, but would you differentiate the broking community in such a way where there's a classic big four bank where a series of these problems come from, not always a broker's fault, as you say, there's higher powers here, versus say an independent broker that has the potential to go to these secondary lenders?
The answer to the broker problem is this: it's not the brokers. I have actually given evidence to lawyers to use in court to show the broker is not to blame.
Right.
And the actual cases we got through the courts in the earlier years through benefactors of funded cases that went through the whole system, one of them went all the way to the High Court. All of these show the broker is not, where the banks tried to say, well, the broker is working independently, it's not an agent of the bank. That is rubbish. That is rubbish. The actual judges out there have come good several times saying the broker is the agent of the bank under the master-servant legal requirement, that there is absolutely no way that these people can be held responsible for what they're selling. It is the bank's responsibility, and they're the ones paying the broker, and therefore the broker works, whether it likes it or not, the broker works for the bank. Because that's where their pay packet is coming from. They do not work for the borrower. So for a while, the banks tried to maneuver this, along with ASIC joining in and doing the same, saying, well, the broker is a separate agent, and therefore they were telling all the consumers to go and take the broker to court.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually on the broker's side. I believe there is a position there for the brokers, but the bank has got to clean up the product, because the brokers have no idea. A lot of them are victims that come to me. That's how I found out what the brokers were doing.
Right.
Most of my investigations into the internal workings of the bank and every step I am familiar with, from the day the people put a signature to the original loan application form, 3 weeks before the contract's drawn up,
Wow.
So I know every situation right through to the tracker, which is the internal workings of the approval of the actual loan by the bank's computer. Now, the bank set out a calculator, and it was a tool, and it still is, and it's compulsory. And yet here is ASIC lying to Parliament, saying, oh, it's just a tool, it's not compulsory, they can use it if they want to. Rubbish, I've got emails. Somebody gave me 2,000 emails from a computer belonging to a broker, and these emails show that it was certain lawyers on the banker's side that shouldn't have been there, that were actually giving brokers advice en masse to the whole of the broker system in Australia to say if the service calculator two-page document is not attached to the loan application form, quote, we will not process your deal. So I spoke to the brokers with that, and the brokers said, yes, that's right. If we don't send the two attached, they send it back to us and we've got to do it all again. So we make sure it's attached. So it was compulsory, so ASIC lied to Parliament.
Hmm.
I mean, what do I do with all this? This is not my job. I've had 30-odd meetings with ASIC commissioners, and I tell them in a joking manner, this is not my job.
Denise, you've spoken a lot about, I guess, what should happen, and I guess putting it back and putting the forecasting hat on, and I guess the cynic's hat is that, you know, there's often a lot of things that should happen in policy that never actually gets done because of, the vested interests start running, decoys and blocking. Yeah. What's your expectation in terms of what will happen, I guess, following, you know, we've got this Westpac case coming up, and which will put some sort of clarity, but I guess water the way, or are you expecting real change?
That's not going to happen. The bank manipulation on that level, there's huge bank manipulation in the banking system, and it infects the financial services. One of the cute things that I think is there at the moment is the banks deliberately developed the broker channel to gather people in mass numbers from the creating wealth system to pump up the volume of loans they're doing, which pumped up the profit for the banks. All right? Now, if you get rid of that, it has serious ramifications for the banks. If they go back to just being a deposit taker and doing a few loans here and there, the loans would be chopped in half in terms of the volume that are sold to buyers that want to buy a house. So what the banks have done is they've cut the young people out of the market. We've all noticed that. But the people buying all these houses were not investors. They were not even sophisticated. They were not even experienced in buying a second house and renting one out. Never done it before in their lives.
Mm.
So what we need is a Royal Commission, number two, to properly run it over 2 years with three Royal Commissioners. And you need to bring the regulators in as to what the regulators knew and did or didn't do during that time.
So, and do you still see the wealth seminars going on?
Well, if you notice, ANZ was the first one to say, we're getting rid of our creating wealth seminars, which must have been a slap over the face to the other three bankers. But I can assure you that they're seriously deliberating whether they should keep these wealth creating seminars going or not. But ASIC should have put an end to them right when I first noticed them happening in 2001. Why did ASIC do that?
Hmm.
What was happening was cruel. It was deliberately targeting older people to believe that this was a major bank. They trusted the logo. They trusted the people in confidence. The broker was really an agent of the bank, and they took it to be that. It was all designed to make you believe that. The logos, the banks even developed little show bags for the children at the seminars.
Wow.
With little money boxes with the bank crests on them and little balls you could play with the crest on it. This is all bank-driven. Until we get to an understanding that's what we're dealing with, it's like the elephant in the room, but all that Hain did was just open the door for a little peekaboo and went on about fees for dead people. That's not the big problem we've got that's going to collapse the market, is it?
And that sort of leads us on, I guess. Yeah, well, thanks for that. Absolutely. I guess if we were just to quickly turn to the property market.
Yes.
There was obviously you're certainly a little bit further ahead in the pullback in WA than we are now in on the eastern side. But obviously there's the Royal Commission and the tightening of credit and the general pullback in property prices. I know you've written a little bit on things like the lending mortgage insurance side of things, and also obviously as house prices are falling and perhaps people are falling behind on their repayments. Did you want to just throw a little bit of light on your thoughts there?
Well, whenever someone fell behind on their payments, the banks have got people in the system that haven't paid a payment and defaulting on their mortgages for 4 years.
Wow.
Nobody knows this. I do. I see it often, right? They're given, initially when they get a loan, these people are given buffer loans. So they're given an extra 50 grand a couple of years later to pay these shortfall payments with. The fraud, you could keep the fraud going another 10 years with that one. But you can only do it as long as there's more equity in the house. So initially they're pulling 110% equity out of the house. These loans aren't 80%. That's rubbish. And why didn't these people be allowed to pay a deposit? Some of them could have used super to pay a deposit. No, they weren't asked for a deposit because that way you could cross-correlate the house into the security, suit mix.
Wow, yep.
So their house is put on the line because they're using the full 110% equity, and it jumps up to 140% equity, LVR, sorry, 140% LVR on the actual house they're buying. And what I also found that is most houses they were sold by the bank's developer clients.
Right.
In joint with the brokers. The brokers know how that works, but they don't see anything wrong with that. And I get why it all looks pretty white and okay. But what happens then is they sold a property. So, for instance, if you live in Victoria, sold a property in Queensland. If you live in Queensland, it's sold in WA. And it's 150 grand over the top of what it's actually worth on the market at that day you purchased it. But you can't do a drive-by. So every house that was sold on this system was sold sight unseen. Why?
It's an interesting one. After you hear all the commotion about vertical integration for financial advice, it's fascinating to hear that it happens in the mortgage and property game as well.
One of the major banks admitted it's gone over to China, into Shanghai, running Creating Wealth seminars with people here that speak Chinese, and they'll go Mandarin, and they go over there, run these seminars, young guys that sound like they know what they're talking about. And we've got a load of Chinese mums and dads never been to Australia. They're not moneyed people. They're quite poor, but they actually own their own small little apartment.
Wow.
And they were talked into buying an apartment, all these high-rise CBDs in the major cities. They were being sold that sort of stuff, 200 grand more than it was worth.
That's amazing.
And that's why we saw a load of people pulling out of that, where they paid a deposit, lost the deposit and pulled out. But if you haven't lost a deposit and you've used your own home, you lose your own home in order to pull out. It's wicked. Utterly wicked.
That's fascinating. And what about APRA? Do they have any...
APRA is a classic. APRA rang me 18 months ago to ask me, Denise, you keep going on about the service calculator. And the service calculator is the villain that generates a projected income. So although the broker uses on the loan application form, say someone earning $120,000 on that form, what they do is they the broker will write that down in his own handwriting, but not in front of the customer. The customer doesn't know the broker is doing this. It's done back at the office after they've signed three pages. This is what he puts on the other eight pages, all right? So the broker will put down $120,000, knowing these people only earn $20,000 or $30,000 a year.
Hmm.
So why does he not think that's fraud?
That sounds like fraud.
It sounds like it, but it's not. Because the broker is told by the banks, you have to do this or you won't make any money. But you get the figure from the calculator, and we supply you with the calculator. And it'll give you a projection. And in law, our lawyers have been over this with a fine-tooth comb, and it's all legal.
Wow.
So the brokers believe this, right? And they write down this figure. That was the whole idea, stitching the broker up if it ever went to court, because it's in his handwriting. Or as today, they type it in, but they're typing it into their laptop.
Mm.
But this is all done back at the office. So when you're putting in these figures, these figures are the wrong sort of thing to do, but they think it's a projection. But they're taught by the bank BDMs. The BDMs are the business development managers who nobody ever mentions. And they're the people that are doing a good job as well. They are paid. They work for the bank. They're bank staff.
Right.
They're on commissions, like everybody else is on commissions, even the CEO. So then they go off and they visit the broker and teach them how to sell this product. Now, ASIC and I have had discussions over these things. And I've said to ASIC, there is no way that about 97% of the brokers are doing the right thing. They're doing a good job. You'll get 3% rogues now and again. You will in any industry that involves money. But in this case, that when they write that figure down on that form, then it's transferred to the tracker in the system. And that's where you end up getting the computer to be able to approve it because they're earning 120 grand. But that's a projection.
Mm.
But the broker doesn't know that's against the law.
And the
borrower doesn't even know they do that.
So effectively, it's just there's an element of blame shifting just inbuilt, systematic through the whole process that allows the person
Absolutely.
To shift it down to the next guy and not worry about
yeah.
it. Yep.
And it's that blame game that made the bank a lot of money, if you think about the big picture now. See, I'm shifting people's thought, and I have to do this with my members, between the intimate details of how this happened, which I'm full bottle on, but also think then of the bigger lasting impact on the economy if this grows into a massive big bubble and it pumps our property market up through the stratosphere.
As we're saying.
Then it becomes a big issue, which is what you're interested in discussing. So the impact on, then, that's the impact on lending. Will the banks collapse? I've no doubt that they've used the creating wealth model for so long. They used this AROP model for so long and the broker channel model for so long. They haven't really, they've been caught a little off guard that they didn't expect to mend their ways and have to put it back into a different model that we'd all approve of.
Mm.
We'd approve for a change. Right? So that's where we're in a hiatus at the moment with the banks scrambling to know what to do next. But my guess is you'll see the major CEOs just disappear into, as some of them have already done, when it first started coming out in 2012, they just simply resign and go somewhere else.
Mm.
They're
yep.
only there for 5 years. The CEOs are 5-year appointments.
Mm.
Impact on the just let me flow here a minute. The lasting impact on the property market will be as follows: that people will lose their homes because they're unsustainable loans. The banks have thought, yeah, but they're all oldies anyway. They might have 10 years left to live or 20 years at most, and they'll all be gone, right? That's all very well and good in a perverted sense if all those people lose their homes and suffer like that so badly over the last 20 years, for example. as long as you don't sell anymore.
Mm.
But the second one is the children. Their inheritance has been stolen by the banks, so they're left homeless.
Mm. Yeah, that's
and I'm talking about children that are now 50 that would normally get an inheritance if that was the case. Now, the people that don't get an inheritance, the young people that whose parents have never owned a home, but they've got a deposit together and they desperately want to buy a home, then the property market has to come down to be able to help them try and get a house.
Yep. Denise,
then we've got a housing problem.
Just to change tack a little bit, you've also do a bit of work on other products that sort of where you see excessive leverage. Is there any sort of areas, any other areas of the economy where I guess you're concerned at the moment that you're seeing financial products come out with sort of excess leverage behind them?
Normally you don't see some. My answer is no, but that doesn't mean they're not there at the moment. The one thing I think that is the big explosion will be the byproduct of the mortgages that I'm talking about will be the RMBS PACs, the RMBS bond market.
Okay, yep. Residential bonds.
I actually got senators to ask this question and grill the bankers 6 to 7, 8 years ago. What percentage of your mortgage-backed securities are Lodox, which is the name they were using for interest only, and all of the answers were, "Oh no, it's only 10%." I don't believe that 1 minute. And the banks have been lying to us all about so many things. I don't think they're going to be the trust and confidence in the bank can't be repaired in Australia for at least 10 years. I will give you that one. At least 10 years. Confidence, it's all right, confidence and trust in the newspaper to say, well, now we've turned a corner. What utter rubbish. I'm telling you now that the 1929 had such an effect in terms of the devastating results of the Depression that lasted the next two generations with old Ma and Pa talking about the pain of the Depression till 1950s. What happened in Australia in terms of the individual family members and their extended families, the very fact of what this Hayne Royal Commission will do is just fan the flames even more. The anger is out there that they got this wish-washy Royal Commission that made it look everybody made them feel twice as stupid. But they're not stupid. They're quite intelligent people. They worked hard all their lives to save up and buy a house. They were the target market.
Absolutely. So look, Denise, I'm very thankful for the time you've shared today, and I can see we are running short now, but I just wanted to just finish on a couple of things. So one is obviously our listeners, many of which haven't yet entered the property market, will probably be needing to get a loan at some point, and are probably listening intently to these horrible stories that obviously you're helping people out with through the BFCSA and your support. Yeah. I guess perhaps the question on the tip of their lips is, what are some of Denise's top tips to help avoid having to seek your services down the track? Are there some sort of clear things that they could go into, a potential lending arrangement with, or to a broker meeting armed with to steer clear of some of these problems?
Yes, if I'd have been invited into the Hayne Royal Commission, I would have done exactly that. It's very simple. If you're a young person about to go, or any age, and you're about to think on your own merit about going to buy a house and get a home loan, and get a home loan through a broker or go direct to the bank, whichever you prefer. I'm not trying to blame the brokers at all. What I'm saying is that if they go in there, I want to know why every loan I've looked at, and I've looked at over 3,000 of them, no one in Australia, even today, is permitted to fill in their own form. Why?
Wow.
And I can see the brokers gasping at that. because they're taught by the banks never, ever let the borrower, the prospective borrower, fill in their own form. So my number one tip, fill in your own form, whether online, and ask, are any other pages going to be added to this? And get the broker to sign to say there are no other pages that he knows of that'll be added to this. So they've got that signature.
Okay.
And bank manager, whether it's internal or external to the bank, right? Second tip is that if they say it's affordable for you, take along a very well-prepared expense sheet and say, I do not want the HPI of the HEM being used. I only want my expense sheet to be used to determine whether or not this loan will be affordable for me on the income I've got right now.
Great. That's a good one. Yep.
And also ask the broker to sign that there will be, that he says he will not add any projections to the income. It'll be the net income. And the other thing is the banks were trying to put down first the gross incomes.
Right.
So only the net income. You know, and that means ex super as well, because you don't get that cash in hand to be able to know if you can afford it. Now, if you can't afford it, just do what my parents did. Live frugally. Don't go to all the lovely things you'd like to go and have a great life. Live very frugally and as cheaply as you can in a rental situation with even another couple, whatever, and save for a deposit. Don't go into a skinny loan that doesn't have any deposit required, because that's where you will borrow far more than you can ever afford to pay back. And I might, if I may, can I just leave you with this quick question you asked once before? You know, you said about there's a $35 million fine that the bank was fined recently, a major bank, to assess 10,500 loans between 2011 and 2015?
Yes. Yep. Westpac. Yep.
Let me leave you with this thought, that what BFCSA, that's our group, say, and people can become a member of BFCSA by going on our website, which is www.bfcsa.com.au, and ask advice.
But sure.
The
sure.
average loan for each consumer borrower, think about this at the moment with what we're dealing with, is $500,000 per person. There, that means that equates to something like $5.25 billion that, and $200 billion is reported to the BIS by APRA per annum subprime, and the stats are coming directly from the banks to APRA. By the way, I just I rang the RBA and the Treasury and the APRA to find out the solution of the banks. The transfer of information. So they collect $33,600 by those figures interest, the banks, and over a five-year period of an average loan, that would be about $168,000. So if you multiply that out in 5 years, banks pick up a gross profit of about $1.764 billion in that period.
And they got a fine of $35 million.
do I think $35 million fine will stop curtail their profit-making machine? I think the ripped-off customers will see a $35 million fine is petty cash.
That's right. It's a rounding error.
Yeah.
No, very good. Okay, well, look, yeah, thanks for that. And you did touch on your website there. Are there any other ways that our listeners can get in touch with the information you're putting out, or indeed if they've got a case for you, drop you a line?
My organisation works in totally on email.
Okay.
So they can email me at denise@bfcsa.com.au. But don't just load me up with phone calls, because there's just me there.
Sure.
And that would just collapse us completely, right? But are we still working with the banks? I work with the banks daily to settle cases. That's what I do. They may not like what I'm saying right now, but they know that I've put more than enough out here in 24 reports to Parliament on the nature of these scandals. But I think what we should all concentrate on doing is sheet the blame back to the regulators, first of all, and the complaint handling systems for their cover-up in this ghastly scandal. And I think the market probably is going to fall to about 50% because of based on the fact that, like Japan in 1998, I know there's all sorts of things the experts will come at me about that. I'm a criminologist. I'm not there to predict what's going to happen to the market per se, but I'm saying this is so bad in Australia in terms of these loans that there's got to be a complete revamp of the system, and the banks have got to be tightly regulated. This self-regulation has been a giant failure to not just the customers, but to the nation state.
Mm.
I'm concerned about Australia having to deal with this problem. You can't shove it in the cupboard.
Absolutely. Well, look, on that note, we might finish up. But look, thanks again very much for your time. I'm sure you're an immensely busy lady, and you're doing a terrific service, I think, to anyone who needs, who certainly, you know, been wronged by the banks. And there's plenty of evidence there that this is quite a prevalent thing. So, look, I thank you again for your time, and we look forward to getting you back on the podcast very soon, Denise.
You're very welcome. And just tell all your listeners, ask lots of questions.
So, Damien, some quality time spent there with Denise Braley, certainly a woman who's been right at the coalface of some of the more egregious examples of modern banking and what they can do to clients. So it was a fascinating bit of insight for someone who has had so much experience in the industry. What are your takeaways?
Yeah, so certainly a lot of stories about the some of the ills sort of that the banks have been doing, and very much along those same lines. You know, we've been hearing from a lot of people, and coming from the Royal Commission, the problems we've got with fraudulent mortgages, and you know, this is really just confirmation, I suppose, that there is a significant number of them out there. I guess the interesting thing for me, from a big picture macro point of view, is this idea is around the wealth seminars, and sort of the thoughts that, you know, the idea is, with every bubble that you're getting into, in terms of financial bubble, you need to keep sucking more people in and giving them products. And as you said, you know, the thing about saying, well, we need to get some Chinese investors into there, and we need to get some of these wealth seminars going, and we need to find new ways of getting more leverage into the system so that we can blow this thing bigger.
Mm.
And that it does look as if those are sort of finishing up. The wealth seminars, I guess, will be one interesting, you know, ANZ cancelling theirs, but it'll be interesting to see, sort of keep an eye on that going forward. Obviously, it's a lot harder to have a wealth seminar when property prices are falling as opposed to property prices rising.
Absolutely.
Having said that, there's certainly, I think there's people out there, plenty of people out there, if you want to look for them, who are busy telling people this is your last chance ever to buy property, and, you know, this, you know, property hardly ever falls. This is a
buy the dip.
second time it's happened, and so, you know, you got to load up. But I think there's keeping an eye on that. Because that'll be one sort of key area to try and work out if lending is going to keep going.
Sure.
I thought it was interesting that there's she's been involved in a number of these other high leverage products like the agribusiness and things like that.
Mm.
That she's not seeing any of those at the moment.
Mm.
It probably says that the housing market sucked all the oxygen out of the air in that area. So that's probably.
Either that or the Shonks have found richer pastures to take
farm
for the present. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I suspect I suspect our next generation of leverage products will be waiting for this housing crash to finish first. But there's, you know, it's, I guess at least that's a small positive
mm-hmm.
to come from it. So, you know, from an investment perspective, it's pretty much confirming our views on that housing market was largely driven by huge increases in credit,
mm-hmm.
and having taken that credit away, that it's been very hard to see the economy kicking on from here.
Yep.
And so, the sort of confirmation of those views, and really just a stick with the our outlook for the Australian economy that will continue to weigh on the economy until we find a new way to pump more debt into the system.
Yep.
And at the moment, that doesn't look as if it's happening.
There was just quickly as well, there was talk there of the trust or distrust that was developed in the 1920s, I think it was. She mentioned there as a period during, and then obviously kicking off recessions, that the trust didn't really reappear in the banks for almost a generation afterwards. Now, for mine, that's gold standard days as opposed to money printing MMT sort of. Do you see the same but different? Does history repeat but not rhyme?
The tough thing for, I mean, the banks have got, as I said, 90% odd market share at the moment. Mm-hmm. If you don't like the banks, you haven't got a lot of choices to where you can borrow from.
That's a fair point.
So I think there's a but as you said, it probably comes back to that. There was a, you can take that, you can take your built up goodwill and flog somebody some housing stuff, yep, some housing wealth seminar things that they probably shouldn't have bought. But once that goodwill's gone and you've lost that, as I said, it's a lot harder to
sell it again.
To sell it again. Yeah. So there is quite possibly a chunk of lending that happened that only ever happened because banks had built up a certain amount of goodwill.
Yep.
And that same lending wouldn't happen, or would be much harder to get that same lending going forward, which is
next generation.
Yeah, one of those reasons for us to be circumspect on the Australian economy.
Okay, fantastic. Well, on that note. Well, that's it for now, and thanks for watching. If you like what you heard today and you'd like to hear more, head over to nucleuswealth.com/subscribe. Give us your email address, and in return, we'll send you a weekly email with new webinar topics, links for our podcasts, and other news from Nucleus Wealth. I certainly hope you've got something out of today, as I have, and we'll look forward to catching you at the next one. Cheers. Hello and welcome to yet another instalment of our Nucleus Wealth Insight series. Just a quick reminder that the following presentation is general information only and does not take into account your personal circumstances. Whilst Nucleus Wealth aims to present informing and sometimes entertaining content, please consult your investment professional, financial advisor, or better yet, speak to us before making any decisions based on any of the themes discussed in today's presentation.